What's up, everybody? It's Austin Rivers from Off Guard, and I've got some exciting news. Off Guard, hosted by me and my guy Pasha Hagigi, is officially moving to our own podcast feed. We are now dropping two shows every week. Me and Pasha go way back and talk so much hoops already that we figured it was time to fire up the mics and let you in on these conversations. Every week, Pasha and myself will hit on the biggest stories happening around the league. Tap into the show twice a week on our new Off Guard feed on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Off the Pike, presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of this episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome into Off the Pike. I'm Brian Barrett, recording late at about 11:30 after the Celts beat the Jazz in Utah. So now that is three straight wins after the loss to Denver. I'll get into that game in just a second here. I do want to get into the Patriots as well. They made another move today in free agency that I liked, but it doesn't look like they're going to get that big fish receiver that we thought they may get. We'll get into that as well. And we may have received some news on who the Commanders are taking with the number two pick, which of course really concerns the Patriots. We may have gotten tipped off a little bit here in terms of who they're looking to take with number two, so we'll get into that as well. So the Jazz stink, but you have no Porzingis in this game. I know they don't have Markin, and you don't have Jaylen Brown in this game either, and you win easily, 123-107, a 20-0 run after the Jazz made this a game, really, in the third quarter. So a professional win for the Celtics. And what I mean by that is the Celtics don't lose to bad teams anymore. And we've mentioned this before, but now the record against teams that are in the bottom 10 in point differential, the Celtics are now 20-0 in those games, according to Cleaning the Glass. So that just tells you what type of team they are. They take every game seriously. And yes, they may aggravate you in some close games against good competition, against Denver, like we saw last Thursday, but when they play bad teams, they ordinarily take care of their business. The one blemish would be that Charlotte game that was just wild earlier this season. Okay, so that's really part of the reason that the Celtics are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference and will have home court advantage in the NBA Finals if they get there, is because they don't only beat a lot of good teams, they beat all the bad teams. They don't lose to the bad teams. Okay, so I've also noticed something that's very encouraging with Jaylen that I want to get into in a second here. This is a bigger, broader thing, and not really a concern with Jaylen. He's been dealing with this, whatever the technical term is, but he's dealing with this back thing for a while. It appears, just give him the day off on a back-to-back. And with Porzingis, this is a hamstring situation, and those things can be really easy to aggravate, so let him take his time. You're on the road. The most important thing is getting Porzingis ready for the postseason, so not something to be overly concerned about. Make sure the guy's healthy, right? So in terms of that, good that you give those two guys a day off and you win easily, and Tatum finishes with 38. He takes 8 free throws. And maybe the most important thing in this game, at least to me from Tatum, is he was 4-for-4 in the restricted area. And we talked about his struggles from two. I can't remember if that was last pod or two pods ago. But if you look at his numbers in March at the rim, these numbers are via Cleaning the Glass, and this is prior to tonight, because like I said, he was 4-for-4 in the restricted area tonight. But prior to tonight, in the month of March, he was just 19 of 35 at the rim, which is 54.3%. It's a terrible number, 12th percentile. Pre-March, 212 of 294, 72.1%, 86th percentile. That was the best mark of his career. So he was finishing at an elite level basically all season until this month. So I don't think it's anything to be overly concerned about, but it was nice tonight to see him go 4-for-4 in the restricted area. And really, when I talk about him finishing inside, I'll get to some examples of that in a second because he overpowered some guys. But the really good thing for Tatum, since the All-Star break, he's been shooting the shit out of it. He was 4 of 10 from deep tonight. So now, since the All-Star break, which is, what, 10 games, he's 35 of 80. That's 43.6%. And Tatum, at times this season, has struggled with the three ball. He's been hitting it really consistently lately. So that's a good thing. But just to illustrate sort of the finishing around the basket and looking like the guy that we've seen for the majority of the season, not so far this month, because you can't get around it. Tatum has struggled this month finishing at the rim. The eye test tells you that. And also, the numbers tell you that. Like, it's both things. So it's good to see him finishing at a high level in this game tonight. At one point early on in the game, Keontae George, who I really like, that rookie, Tatum just basically throws him off him and then dunks on Sensabaugh right at the beginning of the game to make it 11-10, sort of send a message as well. And then he has Sexton on him, posts up Sexton, double comes, and this was interesting, when the double comes where Tatum can seize it, so he spins baseline and finishes, gets an and one, easy opportunity there. Then later on, screen and roll, after it's a screen and roll, he goes to his left, finishes with his left to avoid the block from Walker Kessler, so he kind of goes underneath the basket, finishes lefty, nice finish there, gets out in transition, finishes at the rim, had back-to-back finger rolls in the third quarter, then he drove through Dunn to get an and one to make it 93-86, and Dunn's a big, strong guy. I mean, obviously Tatum has the height advantage, but Sexton is a beast in terms of, Dunn is a beast just in terms of the overall physique. Tatum finishes there. That was a four-point game when he finished that to make it 93-86. That was a big one. He did hit a big top-of-the-key three to make it 96-91. Not talking about finishing at the rim. But two back-to-back big baskets after they had cut it to four and after they had cut it to two. So big baskets from Tatum. And the biggest thing that I took away from this game tonight, he looked like the guy that we've seen the majority of the season in terms of his finishing. And that's the one concern that we've had lately with Tatum, is the finishing at the rim has been bad. Obviously, the Denver game is a different situation. He was just MIA for the majority of that game. But in terms of the finishing, putting his imprint on the game, we certainly saw that in this one tonight. And now he gets ready for another showdown against Kevin Durant on Thursday, when, yes, the Celtics got the win against Phoenix, but Durant outplayed him, right? Durant had 45 in that game. Tatum had 29, but he did it on 11 of 28 shooting. So it's going to be interesting to see this game at the Garden on Thursday night, to see the Tatum-Durant matchup, see how Tatum takes that personally or not, and see if Tatum outplays Durant this time. Okay, a big night for Derek White, 24 on 7 of 11 from deep, and that was the big thing with White. He had been struggling a little bit from deep, where his previous four games, he's 1 of 14. He hit 7 tonight. So that had been really the only struggle for Derek White recently, is he was in a little bit of a shooting slump, shot his way out of that convincingly tonight. And I do think that sometimes is good when, hey, Jaylen got the night off, Porzingis got his third consecutive game off, so you need more scoring from Derek White, because he had been doing so much facilitating lately that, hey, tonight's a night that you need his scoring. And he took 11 threes in his previous four games. He had only taken 14. So tonight he realized, you need my scoring, let me help you out in the scoring department, and clearly he did that. So I thought it was good that, hey, Jaylen gets the night off. That means extra shots for Derek White, which I thought was really important to get him out of that shooting slump. Not that Jaylen Brown was taking shots away from Derek White. That's not what I'm saying. It's just, when a star player is out of the lineup, it's an opportunity for Derek White to get some shots up, and he certainly did in this game tonight. Because prior to tonight, you look at the month of March, this is what is so fascinating about Derek White. 43 assists in the month of March entering tonight. He had three more tonight. That was tied for 10th prior to tonight's slate of games. And then if you look at the blocks, he had 11 blocks this month, which was tied for 8th. Three more tonight, so now he's up to 14 in the month. But he was tied for 8th in blocks this month. He is a guard. And I know we always say, hey, it's the most blocks among guards. But to be 8th in the NBA in blocks for a month at the guard position is just ridiculous. How about the one he had on John Collins tonight? John Collins is trying to back him down in the post, and Derek White stands him up. Collins goes up for a shot. He just blocks it on him, which is just like, this guy is, I guess he's more of a 3.5 than he is a 4, but he's a bigger player than Derek White, and Derek White just blocks him. We see this stuff all the time with him. So really nice Derek White game, and I thought another nice Cornette game. Cornette finishes with 12, 9, and 6 assists. He had the dunk from Holiday to start the game. He had the tap out, which eventually leads to a holiday three. That made it 58-50. This is one thing about Cornette. We referenced some of the numbers with him on the court in the past in terms of how many second chance opportunities they get. But this tap out thing, he has perfected. He also had an offensive rebound that led to a Derek White and one. He had a putback that made it 20-10. He had a roll with Derek White to begin the fourth quarter where it's like, hey, the Jazz are making this a game. The Celtics go on that unbelievable 20-0 run. Cornette was on the court for that. Nice pick and roll with Derek White where Derek White throws him up a lob. He gets two free throws out of that, hits both of those. His roll numbers on the season are ridiculous. He was 21 of 27 entering tonight. Not that it's high volume, but when he gets the opportunity to be a roll man, he ordinarily finishes. And I think he realizes what his role is with this team. I'm going to be a roll man. I'm going to be in the dunker spot at times. I'm going to set screens. I'm going to get extra possessions. I'm going to tap the ball out. Like, he knows exactly what his assignment is for this team. And that's like the perfect thing you have at a role player. I just think he's been flat out good as of late. You look at his numbers on the season, he averages 4.4 offensive rebounds per 36 minutes. That is sixth in the NBA. So that's really good. Had 14 in that Phoenix game. He's now strung together a really nice stretch of games here. I just think he's a decent player. Like, he's much better this year than he was a season ago. I give him a lot of credit for carving out a role on this team. All right, we should mention Hauser because he now has been on fire, where if you look at it, he had, what, four threes in this game tonight after six in the last game. So he has 10 threes in the past two games. And you need that from role players when it's a long road trip and you have guys out of the lineup. Every once in a while, you need somebody to come in, catch fire. He certainly did it more so in the game against the Blazers than this one. It looked like he was going to have another monster game tonight. Hit all four of his threes in the first half of that game. So he had hit, what? When you look at it, he had 10 threes in six quarters, which he's certainly capable of doing. But that was nice to see Sam Hauser getting hot sort of on this trip as well. Okay, now I want to get to my bigger, broader thing. Because this is a very good trend for the Celtics. And this is prior to the game tonight. So if you look at the Celtics post All-Star break in terms of points in the paint, that number was at 54.4, which was sixth in the NBA. Pre-All-Star break, that number was at 46.3. So a big difference, and that ranked 28th in the NBA. So if you follow the numbers here, Jaylen Brown post All-Star break, 16 points in the paint. Fifth behind De'Aaron Fox, Jokic, Giannis, and LeBron. Okay, pretty good company. Like, two big guys, one of the most powerful players in NBA history in LeBron, and one of the fastest guards in the NBA who's always top of the NBA in drives per game. Pre-All-Star break in terms of points in the paint, Jaylen was at 10.6, which was 24th. He's actually behind a guy like Kyle Kuzma. So he went from 10.6 up to 16. So if you look at this, the Celtics, we gave you the numbers. They're up 8.1 points in the paint per game post-All-Star break. Jaylen is up 5.4. So 66% of the increase is Jaylen Brown. Okay, Tatum's up a little bit from 8.4 to 9.6. Porzingis is barely up 8.3 to 8.9. But that number is up 66%. The team's number is up 66% because of Jaylen. Or I should say 66% of the increase is Jaylen Brown. So this is happening because of Jaylen Brown. The reason the numbers, the points in the paint are going up are because of Jaylen Brown. More evidence of this. If you look at the numbers in the restricted area, post All-Star break, the Celtics are averaging 28.8 attempts per game in the restricted area. That is sixth in the NBA. Pre-All-Star break, that number was at 23.7, 26. Okay, so that is a massive increase, and you go from 26th in the league to 6th in the league. If you look at post-All-Star break, attempts in the restricted area. Number one in the NBA is Giannis at 10.4. Number two in the NBA is Zion at 9.7. Number three in the NBA is Jaylen Brown at 8.6. Pre-All-Star break, Jaylen was at 5.1. So again, do the math on this. Jaylen is up 3.5 attempts per game in the restricted area. The team is up 5.1 attempts per game in the restricted area. So Jaylen is responsible of north of what? 68% of the increase. Tatum, minimal, 5.4 to 5.7. Porzingis up a bit, 4.2 from 3.7. But the majority of this is Jaylen Brown. So you're getting to the basket more, and you're getting more points in the paint. And all these numbers are going way up for the Celtics because of Jaylen Brown. And because of all this, the Celtics offense with Jaylen on the floor post All-Star break, 9 games, a 132.3 offensive rating. Incredible. Jalen off 109.4. I'm less concerned about that off number than I'm just looking at the on number. So that on off is plus 22.9. You look at pre-All-Star break, Celtics were awesome with Jalen on the floor, 118.7. But they're actually better with Jalen off the floor at 121.9. Now it's not even close. So we've talked about Jalen a ton on this pod and how sometimes he doesn't fare well in the impact metrics, right? Well, the trend right now is Jalen is getting to the cup and Jalen is living in the paint. So those numbers for the team, the impact numbers are way up for Jalen. But more importantly, those numbers, restricted area attempts, points in the paint, they're up for Jalen. And this is somewhere where the Celtics haven't been in a while. And I get it. It's just post All-Star break. But it's a trend that can clearly continue for this team where they can at least, I'm not saying be sixth all year or sixth the rest of the season in restricted area attempts and points in the paint. But they can be in the top 10 if Jalen continues to play this way. You look at Jalen, too, on those short mid-rangers. This is part of those paint numbers. But if you look at it, that just means shots outside of 4 feet and closer than 14 feet. This is via cleaning the glass. He's 121 of 243, 49.8% on the season. That is in the 92nd percentile. A lot of that is that fadeaway game that he has, right? Those fallaways. He was at just 45% in that range last season, 69th percentile. So way up when it comes to that with those little turnovers over small defenders. So if you look at it, pre-All-Star break, the Celtics were obviously awesome. A 120.8 offensive rating. They were the best team in the NBA on offense. Post-All-Star break, they're up to 126, which is first in the NBA as well, obviously. But that is 4.6 better than anybody else in the NBA post-All-Star break. And it's 5.2 points per 100 better than they were pre-break. Now, a lot of that, not all of it, but a lot of it is on Jaylen Brown. That's the biggest difference. So I've talked about throughout the season how Porzingis being the biggest difference maker for this team, right? Because he brings something to the table that they haven't had in the past. And I stand by that, right? He has the gravity as a shooter where other guys in the past haven't had that gravity as a shooter. And that opens up driving lanes too for a guy like Jaylen Brown. But you think about the gravity that Porzingis has, right? Like Grant Williams in the past, he'll have that great game 7 against the Bucks where he hits a bunch of threes. But remember in the finals, Draymond said those guys, referring to him and Al Horford, after the Celtics shot the shit out of the ball in the first game of that finals, Draymond said that, hey, it's not going to happen that way all the time. Well, you're going to leave Al Horford open. As much as Al has improved as a three-point shooter, you're living with him taking some threes. Same thing with Grant Williams in the past. You're living with him taking some threes, not with Kristaps Porzingis. And also secondarily, he of course gives you a guy that can score in the high post, the low post, all that different type of stuff. But this post-All-Star break trend with Jalen is something that nobody else on this team provides. Just like what Porzingis provides, nobody else has provided that really in recent history with the Celtics. Same thing with what Jalen provides. Nobody else does it. Tatum can have games where he scores a ton of points in the paint, but he's not going to do it for an extended period of time where you're third in restricted area attempts post-All-Star break and you're fifth or sixth in points in the paint or fifth in points in the paint post-All-Star break like Jalen is right now. Tatum's not going to do that. And I point out Porzingis opening up the court, what he's done for this team this year. Those lanes are going to be open for Jalen. There is no shooter now that you're leaving with the Celtics. You're not leaving Drury's one of the best corner three-point shooters in the league. You're not leaving Derek White. We just saw him hit 7 threes in this game tonight. You're not leaving Jason Tatum. You're not leaving Kristaps Porzingis. So these lanes should be even more wide open for Jaylen Brown, and he's really taking advantage of them lately. So this team, to me, is, like, if you look at the Celtics, they can, with their defense, their offense is always now going to keep defenses honest. And what I compare what Jalen's been doing recently to in terms of attacking the basket, getting into the paint, getting to the rim, I compare it to, like, a great running game, where you feel the Celtics on defense all the time, right? They're all over you, right? You're thinking about Derek White pressuring the ball, Derek White blocking shots, Drew Holiday pressuring the ball, getting in your jersey, Jalen Brown, who's been outstanding on the defensive end this season, especially in isolation situations, taking on big-time matchups. Tatum is unbelievable as a help defender. You feel them defensively. And then, hey, if you get past the first line of defense, Porzingis is there to swat your shot away. Or Derek White may come from behind and swat your shot, as we've seen so many times this season. So on defense, you always feel the Celtics. But offensively, you don't always feel them because They take a ton of threes. And this is not a criticism. I've told you, I'm a supporter of taking more threes than anybody else in the NBA. But what we've seen teams do post All-Star break, they're trying to run the Celtics off the line. Philly did it in that weird matchup, and Phoenix did it. Durant even mentioned it, where they kept them to 39 attempts. Like, that was important for Phoenix to do. So what the Celtics are now doing, and in particular Jaylen Brown is doing, is they had 60 points in the paint in that game against Phoenix. So they are making you pay for running them off the three-point line, and they're adjusting to what the defense is doing. So if you think about it, it makes sense why teams are trying to do this. The Celtics are hitting 16.2 threes per game. Entering tonight, no other team was making more than 15. The Celtics are like, every team takes a lot of threes now. The Celtics are an outlier. They're hitting these threes at an insane level where it's more than one more than anybody else in the NBA on a nightly basis. So what's happening is the Celtics, who have one of the best net ratings in NBA history, right? They're going to finish out the season in the top 10 in net rating. They're blowing out teams because they're hitting those threes at a high level. Like, a lot of these games are just lopsided. You can't keep up with the Celtics from a three-point percentage standpoint and a three-point make percentage standpoint. So what you're trying to do is take those away. And what the Celtics have needed to do is, when that happens, when teams are running you off the three-point line, you have to hammer teams inside. And the Celtics are doing that lately, and it's mainly because of Jaylen. So if you think about it, it's like a great passing team of the NFL, where you know when your pass attack, when your passing attack, your aerial game is clicking, right? When you have Brady, Gronk, Edelman, Amendola all going up and down the field like at an insane level, or previous to that, Brady with Welker and Randy Moss, like, you're all good. You're going to blow them out. When that is all clicking, you have no competition. And the Celtics, when they're clicking from three-point territory and they're hitting their threes like crazy, north of 40%, they're getting the attempts up, nobody's beating them. Like, that's just what the reality is when you win the math game that dramatically. But when, say, Gronk was doubled, Edelman's not having the best game, or Edelman's sort of banged up, Amendola doesn't have it going, they're daring you to run the football, right? Like we've seen in the past with when the Patriots were in their heyday and when Brady was the best player in the world, what they would do is they'd invite the run. And we saw times where, like, LeGarrette Blount in a playoff game would rush for 148 yards against the Colts. Now, part of that is the Colts had a bad rushing defense as well, but sometimes teams were so scared of the Patriots' passing attack that they'd invite them to run, and you had to punish them with the running game as well. And it's actually easier to run the ball in those situations because the boxes are so light and teams are so scared of the Patriots throwing all over them that they say, hey, go run on us, okay? That's like the worst. I mean, that's easier than us trying to stop your threes. So it's sort of similar to the Celtics, where it's like teams are so petrified of them hitting all their threes. They're like, okay, we're not going to have protection at the rim. The lane is going to be open, okay? So if you beat your guy, you can go score at the rim. But we are not letting you hit a bunch of threes by double-teaming you when you get in the paint. We're not going to send doubles. So what you have to do is make them pay with points in the paint, attempts in the restricted area, and we've seen the Celtics post-All-Star break be sixth in both of those categories. And that's because of Jaylen Brown. And you also sometimes, especially when you get into a postseason series, sometimes you just have to imprint your physicality on the game in the series. And Jaylen does that by attacking the rim. So this is just, to me, it's another major development for the Celtics as we get closer to the postseason. I also think that Jaylen is the guy that gives the Celtics team an edge. Tatum is not the guy that's going to get in your face. He'll talk a little trash, but he's not the in-your-face guy. Drew and Derek White are not that way. Like, Drew's going to get after you defensively. Derek White's going to get after you defensively, but they're not going to be in your face all the time. Kristaps Porzingis will talk a little trash. He'll do that some of the times. But Jaylen's the guy that he'll say stuff publicly, right? He'll mock teams publicly. We're like, he'll go on Twitter after the Warriors play that stupid defense where they gave Jaylen Brown wide open threes, and he'll say, he'll literally tweet that he thinks more teams should do it. He's the guy that'll talk shit. He's the guy that'll get in your face. So I do think he brings that edge. And the fact that he also brings the physicality, getting downhill, getting to the rim, getting in the paint, I think it's a major plus for the Celtics team. And it's been so negative, really, since the Nuggets loss. And the Celtics can't prove anything until they play the Nuggets, hopefully, knock on wood, in the NBA Finals. They can't prove anything about that game. But I do think we can take some positives from what's going on here post-All-Star break in terms of, okay, we know this is the best offense in NBA history. I know it's going to be skewed because of how the game is played now. And we know this team has been awesome post-All-Star break, but everybody's concerned about that Denver loss, and I get it. Like, I told you, I'm very concerned about playing Denver in a postseason series, but I do think this is something to monitor. The restricted area attempts, the points in the paint, because when Jaylen's doing this, it brings a totally different aspect to this Celtics team, and I think it gives them more of a bravado, more of a, hey, sort of fuck you ball against other teams. You think we can't beat you if we only hit threes? Here we go. Because Celtics fans, we get, like, people get mad in the fan base about people saying, oh, they only take threes, they only take threes. When you do stuff like this, it sends a message to the opponent. Okay, you're not going to put any protection at the rim. You don't think we're going to take advantage of that? So I love the fact that, in particular, Jaylen has been doing this. And this is something he should clearly be able to do once you get into the postseason. And if teams do try to take away Jaylen's drive game and try to protect the rim more and help off guys, well, okay. And to Jaylen's credit, early on in the season when he wasn't playing the best basketball of his career and he was sort of struggling with his playmaking, well, he worked on his playmaking. Okay, if you're going to bring help, I'm going to kick it to Derek White on the wing for a three. You're going to bring help, I'm going to kick it to Drew Holiday. Oh, you're bringing Porzingis's guy, I'm going to kick it back to Porzingis. So I just think this element, Jaylen getting downhill and those numbers increasing, I think it's a significant trend for the Celtics. All right, a lot more to get into, including the Patriots bringing back another free agent, but I don't think they're getting a big-time receiver. We'll get into that next. Bet the NBA with a no-sweat same-game parlay from FanDuel every Thursday with TNT Thursdays. It doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or already have an account. You'll get bonus bets back if your same-game parlay doesn't win on any NBA on TNT game. NBA same-game parlays are the perfect way to combine your bets for a chance to score a bigger payday. And I'm looking at another big game for the Celts coming up on Thursday night, a rematch against the Suns. I like Tatum for 25 points, Jaylen for 20, Drew Holiday for 4 rebounds, and then you can parlay that with the Celtics on the money line. However you want to play, just head on over to FanDuel.com/Pike to bet the NBA with a no-sweat same-game parlay with TNT Thursdays. That's FanDuel.com/Pike. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit theringer.com/RG. Minimum 3-leg parlay required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Max refund $5 unless otherwise specified. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Welcome back into Off the Pike, transitioning over from the Celtics to the Patriots, of course, as free agency underway in the NFL, and another signing for the Patriots, Josh Uche coming back to the Pats. He gets a 1-year, $3 million deal. It's worth up to $8 million. I did find this interesting. Zach Cox, who, of course, we had in the pod last week, had this note. He's the first player that the Patriots have drafted in the first three rounds that they've signed to an extension since Daron Harmon. Daron Harmon was drafted all the way back in 2013. That means that extension kicked in 2017. Unbelievable. That's the last time they've signed one of their premium picks, if you will, first three rounds. Mark Daniels had this quote from Uche. This is going back to when Mayo was originally hired. He'd be a coach I'd want to play for. I'd run through a wall for him. I love players' coaches. Shit, I'm all in on Mayo. So you would think that at least a large portion or a large part of the reason that Uche wanted to be back here is to play for Jerod Mayo. So he takes a 1-year prove-it deal. It was reported he had bigger offers out there in other locations, but he takes a 1-year prove-it deal with the Patriots. Not that he was going to get this big-time multi-year contract offer from somebody else. I'm actually surprised the number they got him at, because I know last year you look at the numbers and they were down. He went from 2022, where he had 11.5 sacks, down to 3 last year. And if you look at Pro Football Focus, they have him 2 years ago at 56 total pressures, which was tied for 16th among edge players. This past season, just 37, that was 58th. The win rate, 19.2%, 6th among edge players. And it was at 11.1% this past season, 64th. So he went from 19.2% to 11.1% in terms of the win rate. He went from 56 total pressures down to 37. Now, his snaps were also down significantly. 2 years ago, it was at 38% of the snaps, down to 33% this past season. So 5 percentage points in terms of the dip. He also went from the total snaps, 373, down to 331, so 43 fewer, and he played the same amount of games. And if you look at the pass rush snaps, 147, tied for 63rd this past season. He was at 196 2 years ago, 34th, so 49 fewer. So a couple of things here. First of all, remember, Matthew Judon only played in, what, 3-plus games last season because of the injury. So on obvious pass-rushing situations, Josh Uche, and basically, too, also because he had the 11.5 sacks 2 years ago, teams were concerned about him as the pass rusher, not Matthew Judon, who Matthew Judon has the bigger reputation of the NFL and has been, of course, the far superior player. So on pass rushing downs, Uche got more attention. So, and the other thing is, I would say, we know what he is, right? He's a pure pass rusher. He was 66th in terms of Pro Football Focus's grade for against the run for edge players. So not particularly good against the run. He's never going to be good against the run because he's not a big player in terms of somebody playing on the edge. So in terms of a one-year deal, I totally love this. He's only entering his 26-year-old season. He signed a below-market deal. He's going to want to prove himself. Not that I question his mode or anything along those lines, but he's definitely going to want to prove he's worth a lot more. He's going to be playing for a multi-year contract, and you're going to have Matthew Judon back as well, so there's going to be less attention on Josh Uche in terms of obvious pass-rushing situations. So, yeah, he had a down last season, but we saw that he can be a guy that gets you double-digit sacks, and you would think that even if it's in between the past two seasons, what you saw production-wise last year compared to what you saw production-wise 2 years ago, this is a nice pickup, or I should say, a nice re-signing for the Patriots, because he's a quality pass rusher. Yeah, he's not going to be out there in a lot of rundown situations. I mean, he's not going to be out there in a lot of first downs, but hey, third down, you need to get after the quarterback. Second and long, get Josh Uche out there because he's really good in those situations. So I look at this team right now in terms of the defense. Uche now back. Duggar, as we talked about, already back. Judon will be back, coming back from the injury. Gonzalez back from the injury. You're hoping Keon White takes a step forward in year two. And think about this. You were without Judon and Gonzalez for most of the season, and the Patriots defense last year finished fourth in scoring percentage against at 31.5%, despite being dead last in opponent field position. So they had the worst field position because the offense was so bad, the turnovers, and obviously the special teams was at issue too. So they were last in opponent's field position, yet they were fourth in scoring percentage against, which is just basically the percentage of drives that the opponents score on. So that's a really good number. Also, you look at the fact that they were sixth in points per drive at 1.60, again, with being the worst team in field position. And you also look at the fact that they were third in yards per drive at 25.2. So this defense was really good last season. You get back your number one corner. You get back your number one pass rusher to go along with Christian Barmore, too, who he had a really good season. If you look at his numbers last year, PFF ranked him their eighth defensive lineman, right behind Chris Jones. Not comparing the players. Don't go crazy here. But I'm just telling you, that's how he graded out. He was that good last season. He had 49 pressures. That was tied for 14th. Among defensive linemen. So I'm really excited about this group. I really feel like they had a great defense last year, and now they brought most of the band back, and I think it's only going to be better entering 2024. So that's the good news. Here's an issue, though. If you look at the receiver situation, you know how I feel. I love the fact that they brought back Kendrick Bourne. I think DeMario Douglas is going to take a step forward in year two. But Calvin Ridley, it was revealed on Wednesday that if he re-signs with the Jaguars before Wednesday at 4 p.m., Jacksonville owes a second-round pick to Atlanta for the trade they made a couple of years ago. If Calvin Ridley re-signs with the Jaguars after 4 p.m. on Wednesday, that pick changes to a third. So you would say, okay, well, what is he waiting for here? Maybe he's just waiting to return to the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? So Doug Kide wrote in the Herald, of course, our buddy Doug, that there's an offer on the table from the Patriots to Ridley. So the Patriots have already made an offer to Calvin Ridley. Now, here's the interesting component. Adam Schefter reports sources believe Ridley prefers to return to Jacksonville. So this, to me, sort of signals Jacksonville has the leverage if Ridley wants to go there, because his other option right now is the Patriots. He's not being linked to other teams besides the Patriots and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And if you're Ridley and you don't even know who the quarterback is going to be with the Patriots, and the other offer is at least similar in value to what the Patriots are offering. Like, the Patriots may be offering more than Jacksonville, but say the offer is close enough where, okay, I know who the quarterback is. It's Trevor Lawrence. Also, he's from the state of Florida. He played college football at Alabama. He may just want to stay in Florida, stay closer to home, and not move to New England when he doesn't know who the quarterback is going to be. But at least in this sense, at least he does. Now, I say the Jaguars have some leverage because they kind of know he wants to be back there. But at least Ridley does have a little bit of leverage where it's like, hey, I have this offer from the Patriots. So maybe that means, hey, I want you to at least come close to that. So we'll see what happens when it comes to the Ridley situation. But to me, it feels like he's going to return to the Jacksonville Jaguars because, and I know this is the big target for the Patriots, but it does feel like if you just read the tea leaves here, he's waiting. The Jaguars have to give up less if they sign him after 4 p.m. on Wednesday. So it does feel like all signs point to him going back to Jacksonville unless something happens where they are way far apart in the offer. But we'll find out more on this, obviously, later on Wednesday and into the week. Okay, so also, Doug Kite and Andrew Callahan, our buddies, reported that the Patriots have checked in on the Chargers guys, some of the defensive guys as well, but important here in terms of the offensive guys. So the Chargers are in such a bad position as it pertains to their cap. Like, this is a mess for them. So Mike Williams and Keenan Allen are guys that the Patriots, according to Doug and Andrew Callahan, have checked in on. So if you look at those guys, if you look at Mike Williams first, he's coming off a torn ACL. He's going to be 30 next year, next October. Keenan Allen will be 32 this spring. Allen, the last 2 years, of course, he's always dealing with injuries. 13 games, 10 games. It's always something. It's like a hamstring or something along those lines, right? But I will say this. Keenan Allen last year, 95.6 yards per game. That was fourth in the NFL. His 8.3 receptions per game, first in the NFL. So when he's on the field, he produces. You look at Mike Williams, just 13 games in 2022 and just three last year because of the ACL situation, of course. Both the guys have an injury history. Williams, more of a down-the-field type guy, 14.4 yards per reception 2 years ago with the Chargers. That was 18th. I'm not the biggest Mike Williams fan. I'm not a fan of his game. Now, I understand why the Patriots would be interested in him because he is a guy that can at least get down the field a little bit, give you a legitimate bona fide weapon on the outside. But if I had my choice, and I know he's 32, I love Keenan Allen. And I know he doesn't really fit the timeline here. You're going to draft a quarterback with the third overall selection, and he's entering his 32-year-old season. But this is just one of my favorite receivers in the NFL. The guy gets open like crazy, as I mentioned with those numbers, produces like crazy. He's somebody that you can continue to target, and he's going to continue to produce as the game goes on. And I know I probably shouldn't like this because he's somebody that is on the older side of things, and he's always dealing with injuries, and there's going to be games where he comes out of and he doesn't come back. Every week, it's going to be like, is Keenan Allen playing or not? He's questionable. You're going to have to go through that. But if you had a chance to get Keenan Allen, we talk about guys that can help out a rookie quarterback, I would do it. I would do this in a second if I could pull this off. Now, we'll have to see what the asking price is, but I would love Keenan Allen in a Patriots uniform. And I know it's not conventional. You want the young receivers with the young quarterback, but I totally would look at this and say, hey, you know what? Keenan Allen, guy's an absolute stud. You're probably not going to trade for a better receiver. Like, the Bengals are not going to, it feels like they're not going to trade T. Higgins. That's not sort of in their ethos. So when you look at it, there's not going to be like a lot of big time receivers on the market. We're seeing what went on in free agency. All these guys either re-upping with their teams or signing with different organizations, and like Ridley's the big name out there. Hey, Keenan Allen is a much better player than Calvin Ridley. It's just the age of Ridley. And Ridley's what, entering his 29-year-old season. It's just the age. If you're asking who's the better player, it's not even close. Keenan Allen's a significantly better player. So I would love him. I'm probably in the minority because of the age, but I would love him here. Okay, so also just a couple of Patriots notes. Parker goes to the Eagles, the Patriots paying the most of that contract. Mike Gesicki to the Bengals, which is interesting. Last year, lowest receiving yards in a season, 244 since his rookie year. Now, a lot of guys did not put up good numbers last year that were playing in that Patriots offense. Gesicki scares me more than Parker. Like, I could see Gesicki going to Cincinnati because of Burrow and because of all the gravity that guys like Ja'Marr Chase have in terms of what the defense is paying attention to. I could see Gesicki actually having a good year. So something else interesting happened today. The Commanders agreed to a deal with Marcus Mariota. Interesting. It's 1 year, $6 million. It's worth up to $10 million. So Jacoby Brissett, the more traditional pocket passer, was in Washington. The Patriots signed him. Of course, they have Sam Howell too. But it's just interesting to note that, right? So Mariota, if you're drafting a quarterback that is going to be part of the running game, wouldn't it make more sense to bring in a backup quarterback like Marcus Mariota to back up, I don't know, Jaden Daniels? And I found this interesting today. So our friends at FanDuel right now, they have Drake May plus 100 for the third pick. Daniels plus 180 as the third pick. If you look at the second pick, Daniels minus 125. So he's minus money now for the second pick. Drake May is plus 115. So does this mean, and does this move that the Commanders have made, does it signal that they're actually more in on Jaden Daniels than they are Drake May? And right now the betting market would tell you the same thing. Now, I've told you this. The weight with Daniels concerns me. And the fact that he didn't weigh in at the combine, that concerns me. And I do feel like right now, and I've been leaning, you know how I was at the beginning of the season. I was talking about May. I was tweeting out stuff about Drake May. I've always been a fan of Drake May. Always been a fan of Drake May. And I'm really now, after the combine, the 6'4", the 223, I really think that he is an unbelievable fit for the Patriots. And I would look at this too. If you look at PFF's top-ranked passers, 2 years ago, he had 39 big-time throws, the most in the NCAA. And if you aren't familiar with it, it's based on their value system that PFF has. Basically, it's on the highest end of both difficulty and value. So basically a pass that has really good location, really good timing, generally thrown down the field more, right? And into a tighter window. Basically, just think of it as as the definition is. Big time throw, or the name of it. Big time throw, okay? So he had the most in college football 2 years ago with 39. This past season, he had the most in college football with 35. And if you look at the NFL, who has the most big time throws in the NFL over the past two seasons? Josh Allen. So it's sort of an indication is this guy has a ridiculous arm. This guy can make all the throws. This guy can make ridiculous throws. So it sort of tells me when you look at him, he has the wild throws. He has the size, as I mentioned, 6'4", 223. So I do feel like people at this time are sort of talking themselves out of Drake May, and Jaden Daniels has become the hotter commodity, even though it feels like Drake May is a guy that is more similar to quarterbacks we've seen in the past in terms of he has the prototypical size. The Jaden Daniels size thing does concern you. And I would say this, I know Jaden Daniels has the best numbers on deep balls. I gave them to you on the pod a while ago. Best numbers on deep balls last season. He did play with NFL wide receivers like Brian Thomas is going to go in the first round. But if you're asking who has the better arm, it's not even close. And Drake May's ability to throw on the run is unbelievable, right? So the boss, Bill Simmons, made the comparison to Josh Allen in terms of what was going on with Josh Allen at the time that he was coming out and sort of comparing that to Drake May. And I do find it interesting because what you had in that 2018 draft, and this is kind of similar if you look at this upcoming draft, if you look at the similarities. So in 2018, Baker went number one. He was smaller, of course, in terms of his size. He had a ton of success. He came from a big-time program like Oklahoma, and he was 23 and he won the Heisman. If you look at Jaden Daniels, smaller in terms of the weight, he has the height, 6'4", but he was also 23 and he came from a big-time program. Okay, then you look at Sam Darnold, who went third overall to the Jets. He was better the year before, and he was a guy that came from a big-time quarterback factory, if you will, in USC, a big-time college football factory. I shouldn't even say a big-time quarterback factory, although my former radio teammate, Sean Salisbury, was a USC Trojan as well, a USC quarterback, played a bunch of years at the NFL, played in the XFL as well. So I don't want to take a shot. If Sean ever listens to this, he's going to be pissed if I don't say it's a quarterback factory. But anyway, then you look at Josh Allen. Some people thought the previous season, even though you had Sam Darnold, who had that great Rose Bowl against Penn State, some people thought Josh Allen could be the number one pick because of his size. And then you look at Drake May. He was right up there with Caleb Williams prior to the season, and he is, what, 237 pounds. So it's funny. You have Caleb Williams and Sam Darnold, both with the same USC program, both had better years before, both smaller than Allen was bigger than Darnold, and Drake May better size than Caleb Williams, certainly in terms of the height, right? But so it, like, you just think about those things. Daniels is sort of similar to Baker. Caleb Williams is sort of similar to Darnold because Darnold's the guy that he wowed everybody the previous season. And Drake May, similar to Josh Allen, like he has that size. And if you look at Drake May, so this is why I think it's a perfect comparison that Bill has made in terms of sort of the criticism that Drake May and the overthinking Drake May is getting right now compared to what Josh Allen was getting. So then you look at this. If you look at the rushing yards, 2 years ago, Drake May ran for 698 yards. That was fifth among quarterbacks. He also had seven touchdowns. Last year, those numbers down a little bit, 449. Josh Allen, his sophomore season at Wyoming, ran for 523 yards. So the running ability, and this is going back to the similarities, the running ability was never really pointed out with Drake May or Josh Allen. Like, we knew these guys were super athletes. We knew these guys were super big, but nobody talks about their ability to run. And Josh Allen's ability to run has been a weapon at the NFL level. And you would think, as Drake May learns the NFL game, he can take advantage of his athleticism, his running ability even more. So Bill's spot on with this comparison. I totally agree. This makes total sense. And now this whole idea of Mariota signing with the Commanders, not this idea, it happened. I'm really starting to think that Washington is leaning towards Jaden Daniels. And if that's the case, I'd be super stoked if they end up getting Drake May with the third overall pick. That would be incredible. I would love this pick for the Patriots. And like I said, I would take Jaden Daniels too. But man, this whole idea of getting Drake May here, very, very intriguing to me. All right, coming up next, we'll bring in producer extraordinaire Jamie McClellan. Welcome back into Off the Pike. Joining us now, producer extraordinaire Jamie McClellan. Jamie, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm good, Brian. I'm pleased so far with the free agency for the Pats, so I'm good.
Yeah, you'd like them to make that one big splash, but yeah. It does sort of feel like this is very Packer-esque from what they used to do, right? Where it's like, okay, let's retain all our guys, mm-hmm. let's bring them all back, and then maybe once in a while they'll make a big splash. And I don't think it's coming in this particular free agency window. I don't. And really, I don't really know who the player was going to be. If you look at it from the Calvin Ridley perspective, we'll find out more about that going on here. But I am surprised that they brought back all these guys like Uche, Bourne, Onwenu. Duggar is the mm-hmm. least surprising to me. I thought they'd bring Duggar back. I talked about that a couple of weeks ago, but I'm pretty happy that they at least brought back all their good players. Like, hey, and I think this defense can be legitimate. I don't want to get too excited about the Patriots because, I mean, the offensive side of the ball, they need a ton of help on the offensive line. They need a number one receiver. They probably need another receiver. Like, the offensive line, it's going to take a while to rebuild that situation. The tight end situation is still, I mean, Hunter Henry's fine, but it's not like you have an elite tight end. So there's still a lot of work to be done on the offensive side, and we still don't know how good Alex Van Pelt is as an offensive coordinator, right? Like, we still got to figure that situation out. But if you get Drake May and you come across with one of the best defenses in the NFL, like, okay, you feel like, okay, maybe you're onto building something entering next season. So I hope they can find something in the draft. And this is where Elliott Wolf, we heard about this whole idea of weaponizing the offense. Mm-hmm. We'll see what he can do in the draft as well, because there's a lot of good receivers in that second to third round. But good thing they took care of their own business, but we'll see what happens going forward. How about the similarities? Like, all these guys that Bill Belichick had here, like, all these guys are coming back. Bill was the problem. Hey, all those guys that Bill signed, let's bring them back. I guess Devontae Parker is a different situation, right?
Parker's at the door, thank God. And somehow, I mean, it's going to be hard to voice Juju on someone else, but that's the next order of business, I think. But you're not wrong. There's some good guys here from the Belichick era.
By the way, that's a good word. Do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I think that's where I got it from years ago, the foist.
Yeah. Great. It's a great episode.
What was the original foist? Was it like an assistant?
Yeah, it was an assistant. So the assistant was like terrible, and the assistant was working for Larry, and the assistant was recommended by Jimmy Kimmel. And so then Larry's Larry goes on Kimmel's show, and Kimmel, you know, comes to see Larry before the show, and he said, "That's a good voice." And Kimmel's like, "I did foister." And then Larry, if anybody's not familiar with the show, I don't know how you don't watch Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's one of the greatest shows ever. But then Larry foister onto Jeff's wife, Susie, who is like, Susie's the most annoying woman in the show. Most annoying person in the show, probably, right? So, well, besides Larry's like newest girlfriend that finally, in one of the last couple episodes, Irma, he finally got rid of her. But yeah, Susie is very annoying. Jeff's wife just like completely hates Larry. But it is funny that Foist. It's a good word, but that is a great episode, the foist. Anyway, sorry, complete digression. My mom actually, I was shocked. My mom told me the other night, I met her and my dad for dinner and a drink, and she watched Curb, and she she thought it was incredible. I couldn't stop laughing. She's trying to tell me the stories at dinner, and she couldn't like say it because she thought they were so funny. And it was
Is she starting from the most recent season or from the beginning?
No, she literally just saw the episode. It was two episodes ago, spoiler alert, where Vince Vaughn's character is dating somebody from Disney, and Vince Vaughn thinks that it's like a Disney executive, and she works at the Disney store. Like she dresses up in all the princess dresses. So my mom thought that was hilarious.
Your mom's in for a treat, Brian. You got to get her starting from season one. She's got a lot of
I'm like, you realize there's 12 seasons in this,
Mom. Yeah, not bad.
All right, Jamie. So you told me you got some trivia.
I do. Well, you were saying it's all about retaining guys, kind of building depth, getting some bodies that can make plays. But harder to make splashes in free agency, I would say, because, you know, the franchise tag, people locking up their own guys. So I was going back, Brian, and I was looking at the last player acquired via free agency to win one of the big three awards. That's what I'm calling the big three. The MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. Who was the last guy to win it? One of those, at least.
Tyreek Hill?
Tyreek Hill didn't. You know, he could have won was this year, but McCaffrey won this year, who was the trade. Again, you can get good players in trades, as we've seen. Stafford, McCaffrey, Randy Moss,
et cetera. Oh, yeah, shoot. No, that's my bad. Tyreek Hill was a trade as well. Reggie White?
Stephon Gilmore, Patriots.
Oh, Stephon Gilmore is the last one. I was going to say all the way back to Reggie White when he went from the Eagles to the Packers.
So Stephon Gilmore, great player. Belichick doesn't get enough credit for that one. I thought they were paid for him, and he had a fantastic career. But just to show you how rare this is, Brian, only two guys have won Defensive Player of the Year and two guys have won Offensive Player of the Year that were acquired via free agency since 2000. So Stephon Gilmore's one. He named the other three.
Hmm. That's a good question because a lot of these are trades. It definitely wasn't DeMarco. I'm thinking of like big name guys. It definitely wasn't DeMarco Murray because he got worse when he went from the Cowboys to the Eagles.
He did win one though. He won one with the Cowboys.
I'm trying to think of the defensive side. Darrell Revis never won one. All right. I can't think.
The defense one is tricky. It's Charles Woodson when he went from the Raiders to the Packers, 2009.
He shouldn't have won that though. He should not have won that. No, Darrell Revis should have won that. That's when Darrell Revis had like the greatest cornerback season of all time. You can go through it and look, the Packers went on, they won the Super Bowl that season. So I shouldn't like be criticizing Woodson too much. But if you go back to that seat, and you could even argue like Clay Matthews is a better defensive player on that team. Charles Woodson, all time great. I'm not trying to critique him. But like he had this season, Darrell Revis did, when you look up all the receivers that he went up against, it's like Ocho Cinco, Andre Johnson, Randy Moss, and all of them did shit. That could have been the season before. But either way, Revis was the best defensive player for like 2 years in the NFL. Okay, so who was the other one? So Charles Woodson, that's a good one. That's one of the rare Packers signings, right? Like when they needed to make a splash, they made a splash.
They make it count.
Maybe Elliott Wolf.
They make it count.
One day he'll sign the defensive player of the year or the offensive player of the year.
You never know. But those are the two defensive guys, Stephon and Woodson. And then two guys on the offense side of the ball, Brian. Two quarterbacks.
Oh, quarterbacks. It was it Brady?
That got signed via free agency.
Yeah, was Brady one? That won Offensive Player of the Year in 2020?
He never won it. In 2020, Derrick Henry won it.
What about Shannon Sharp when he went to the Ravens?
Now, two quarterbacks, Brian. The big, big guys.
Oh, yeah, two quarterbacks, you said. I'm not paying attention here. Two quarterbacks. Yeah, Stafford was a trade. I said Kurt Warner already, so it wasn't Kurt Warner. I'm trying to think. It wasn't was it Brett Favre 2009 with the Vikings? Did he win Offensive Player of the Year?
Not Brett Favre, but so it was Drew Brees when he went from the Chargers to the Saints, and then Peyton Manning when he went from the Colts to the Broncos.
Oh, I'm an idiot! How did I not get Peyton Manning? Oh my god! That's the most obvious way. He broke Brady's record.
Yeah, he did.
Oh,
he
my God.
The best offensive season of all time. But they're both weird ones because they were dealing with these odd injuries, like the neck surgery and the shoulder surgery. So unusual circumstances for both the guys.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought Brees was a trade, but he wasn't because they had drafted Philip Rivers in 2004, and they decided to go with Philip Rivers, and then you had the whole situation, like, who knows? Nick Saban, if he ends up in a situation where they get Drew Brees instead of Dante Culpepper, maybe it's a different rivalry between the Patriots and the Dolphins totally. And Bill and Saban. Like, think about that. Alabama probably never gets Saban if they ended up getting Drew Brees. It's just wild. And then the Peyton Manning, I'm going to kick myself for that. That's just that's just stupid because they got lucky. They drafted Andrew Luck. Yeah, well, I guess in the long term, they didn't get lucky because Luck retired so early in his career. But those are good questions. Those are good questions. I like that. Little trivia.
Last one, Brian. Same thing with the MVP. We just talked about Peyton Manning won it in 2013 with the Broncos. There's only one other free agent that has ever won the MVP. And I will give you my life savings if you get this right, Brian.
Steve Young?
Steve Young actually got traded. That's a good point. He did switch teams,
from
though.
The I was going to say from the Bucks.
That is a good point. Mark Moseley in the strike-shortened 1982 season. Place kicker, Brian, for the Redskins. Only special teamer to ever win.
That's amazing. A place kicker. A place kicker.
He went 20 for 21 that season with a long of 48 yards. How times have changed.
Can you imagine if a place kicker got an MVP vote nowadays? Like Harrison Butker gets crazy. One for the Chiefs. I guess he's the best kicker, right?
Well, I saw. Okay, so this guy, Mark Moseley, is 95% field goal percentage the year he won. Pretty good. That would have only been third this year behind Kai Fairbairn and our boy, Nick Folk, who went 29 for 30 this season. That's got to hurt.
Yeah, well, good thing the Patriots drafted a kicker between before Puka Nacua.
I didn't have the heart to compare his numbers to Ryland. Though, in fairness to Ryland, you know, I think in that kick he missed against the Giants to lose the game, probably wouldn't be talking about Drake May today if that happened.
Good point. He knew it. He was in on it. He said, so hey, we need a quarterback. It's like, hey, this Mac guy sucks. Zappy's not the answer. He's not it. I'm gonna tank this thing, baby. Chad Ryland, is he the MVP of the season?
There's crazy conspiracy theories. That the way that ball just shanked off to the left, that thing was no good from the second it left his foot.
Yeah, thanks for missing that, Chad. Now get back to work, bro. Get that ready for next year. All right, Jamie. Good stuff, man.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, as always, make sure to get your voicemails in, 617-396-7172. Email your thoughts and questions at offthepike@gmail.com. We'll be chatting with Andrew Callahan later on in the week, so we'll recap all the free agency stuff with Callahan. He's had great intel on everything that's going on with the Patriots. Thanks to Jamie McClellan and Steve Cerruti for producing this podcast, and we'll chat in a couple of days. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1800gambler.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.